back from Maxine.
Sorry, what?
I got a nice note back. I'd written you and said I'd sent a note to Maxim Applegate. And I got a nice note back. I think we've settled our issues. We're fine.
Oh, God.
Charles Blake, not so much, I suspect.
Yeah. Okay. This is Lindsay Miller, and you're listening to the Arkansas Times Week Interview Podcast. On this week's edition, we're going to talk about the latest COVID-19 news, Terrible Tom Cotton, and Top Golf and Little Rock. I think that maybe we've had the same topic list.
Every day when I do my daily Facebook video, I think, how can I say these same things over and over again? I don't. Anyway, yes. But there are always new wrinkles.
Yeah. Well, so in the COVID topic, several new wrinkles this week. We had huge spikes in cases the last couple of days. The discussion on schools has really heated up as we predicted. We had a number of groups come out and say that Arkansas should not open its schools in person, with the case rate as high as it is. And then we had Senator Jason Rapert, hospitalized with pneumonia and COVID.
Yeah. Wow. What a week. Well, first of all, I mean, we had 1,000 cases yesterday, and although that may have been a product of some catch up on some testing, but we had a legitimate 990 new cases today. And the bottom line were in these charts that the governor shows every day, and he finally had to acknowledge two very pertinent points. One is that the 7-day rolling average of new cases, that is, you take a week's worth and average them out, it's at our highest level ever. It's a steady upward trend from the beginning of this pandemic. There's no sign of it decreasing yet. And secondly, our hospitalization rate is at its highest number yet, up near 500 people. Now, I think when the governor says that the facilities are ample currently to care for those people, I think he's correct. He added a new dimension to statistics today to point out that there were 4 in this Fort Smith hospital and 4 in a Fayetteville hospital and so on. And so it was kind of spread around the state, but in a sense, that's not good news. The fact is that there's now a steady stream of 6 or 7 counties that are having 30 or more cases a day. Little tiny Newton County had 55 new cases today, 55 up in the Ozarks. This undoubtedly is a single nursing home or something of that ilk, I would guess, but I don't know that yet. But the fact of the matter is all the signs point to the fact that we are not out of the woods yet. And actually, I was interested. The governor is prone to emphasize the positive and downplay the negative. And today he had a really ripe opportunity to be really disingenuous, because the head of the CDC issued a statement today. That's the Centers for Disease Control, that all things taken into account, kids ought to go back to school. Kids aren't as likely to get serious disease. They don't transmit it as readily at a very young age and with proper steps. And they're subject to terrible things if they don't go to school. It was essentially a political statement backing Donald Trump. And it's prompted an outrage from the scientific community. I mean, Andy Slavitt, the former Medicaid director under Obama, is just furious about it, saying that the CDC ought to fire the guy who's ahead of it and do something about the CDC, that it's just forsaken its mission as a scientific arbiter. But the governor didn't emphasize that. I fully expected him to roll that out today when he was asked, as he always is, about, are you still going ahead with school? And he said, well, he had to acknowledge that the CDC has recommended that schools only reopen in those places where they have a positive testing rate of 5% or less. Well, guess what? The overall state rate is 8%. And in the last few days, it's been way beyond that. So, you know, I mean, I give him some credit for that. Nonetheless, he's still ready to move ahead with school. But he said something today. I mean, I think you could read it as saying that, well, part of what we're doing is to be prepared to go online if we have to. And you almost get the feeling that he sees that day coming. I'm reading into body language and everything else here. And yeah. So I don't.
Well, to the point that the state has a plan for returning to school, it's all districts have to be prepared to go online. So that's been something that he said over and over. My takeaway from today, and he said this in maybe a little less clearly in previous briefings, but it's, hey, look, we passed this mask mandate. It's going to take a little while for us to see the effect, but we've got enough time between now and now delayed school for it to work. So hold your fire and we'll see. But that is not comfort to
thousands of
educators and, you know, half a million students and their families who you just have no idea. I unfortunately did not get to tune into the Little Rock fake school board meeting last night, the community advisory board meeting, but I heard from some folks that there were something like 1,000 questions that had been submitted by parents to the administration and that they could answer virtually none of them. Allie Nolan has a good post on this on Facebook. And, you know, she says, I didn't blame the administration. I mean, what are they supposed to do? Their hands are largely tied on.
Well, one of the really big issues is this thing that also plays out in the community. What do you do when somebody tests positive? Student or teacher? I mean, who gets quarantined? Who doesn't get quarantined? Who stays home? Who doesn't go home? Who's responsible for contact tracing and understanding, figuring out that person who's been exposed or is positive, how far you go with it in a setting where, you know, you've got, I mean, in Little Rock, 22,000 students, maybe. I mean, we've already saw, though, I thought interesting from that board meeting last night is it looks like 11,000 parents are going to not send their kids to school.
No. 11,000 parents have responded to the survey, and of those, about
it was half of them.
So half of the parents have not responded to the survey. So that's a big problem in the planning for Little Rock is they, you know, reasonably have said we will allow you to change your option up to a certain point. August 1st is kind of what they're going with now. But, I mean, there's going to be some huge shifts probably if cases continue to rise. I'm sure that there are a lot of parents who were fairly ambivalent about it, who might not have serious health concerns. They might not have people with medical conditions in their family who are ready to send their kids back so they can go on with their life. But if the cases are really skyrocketing and they don't see a clear plan from the district, they're going to pull them back. So, but it's a circular thing because the district, all districts struggle to plan when they don't know how many kids are going to be in person versus virtual. How do you allocate your resources? Anyway, I wrote a big story about this that I would commend to everyone. It's on the Arkansas Times website. As soon as it was published, it was out of date to some degree because this story is changing so rapidly. But a lot of the concerns, I think, are going to remain evergreen. Well, let's.
I really thought one of the most interesting things said at the governor's news conference, which I've become a huge cynic about and find them nearly worthless, was he was asked about football. All the small colleges have pretty much universally decided not to try and play football this fall. The big colleges where the big money's at play are holding back. And so he was asked, you know, these little jerkwater conferences that play football in Arkansas, they're not going to play football this fall. Shouldn't the Arkansas Activities Association, which oversees high school football, make the same decision? And he didn't say yay or nay, but what he said was, is now understand, they're not practicing football now. They're just doing conditioning drills where they can socially distance and wear masks. And we haven't yet made a decision on going into full contact sports for football, soccer, and whatever else in the fall. And so the time is drawn now on football, and the fact that they're holding on something that is so universally popular and is the reason for being for so many people, both student level and parent level and coach level, that they're not ready to say that. That tells me there's a great deal of uncertainty in their quarters as well about the shape of school.
Yeah, well, this is a not so bold prediction, but we are not going back to school and we're not going to play football. I just don't see it. Maybe in maybe, you know, Pangburn will play Cutter Morningstar, but the big districts, there's just no way. And,
yeah,
and
I can't don't think
college football will happen either. There will be lots of move back and what if we do this, but it ain't going to work.
Here's what I don't understand. One more school thing. Let me belabor it. I thought my sometimes nemesis on the fake school board and former school board member, Melanie Fox, said, why don't we just start school all virtual? And amen. Why not? And they won't let Little Rock do it. They won't let anybody who's a real public school do it, except they'll let online virtual academies do it. They'll let them do it. I mean, why not let school start strictly
virtual? Well, it's entirely because the governor correctly understands that you can't reopen the economy fully without reopening schools. And he said as much. It's we have to get back to school so we can get our economy really revved up again. But that's...
And in other words, money are more important than people's health.
I think that's one way of reading it.
That's how I read it.
There was a good report from Leslie Peacock of a legislative... I believe it was a legislative council meeting yesterday.
Well, it was a joint public health committee meeting.
Okay. Where there was some CARES Act funding proposals that were put forward, including some contact tracing specifically for Hispanic and Marshallese populations in Northwest Arkansas, and that got voted down. And oh man, just reading some of the skeptical comments from legislators, not surprising, I guess, but oof, some
what a bunch of ignorant, pig-headed fools. You know, this was about spending $7 million in federal money to do way more testing and way more contact tracing among a population that has been responsible for a disproportionate rise in our COVID-19 cases. It makes perfect sense. And there are some legitimate complaints about testing, which is limited because of supply shortages, which can be traced to Donald Trump, and contact tracing. We don't have enough people on the ground doing it yet, and we may not ever have enough to do the job that needs to be done to make it really effective. Those are legitimate points of debate, but that really wasn't why this proposal foundered. It foundered because there are idiots like Mary Bentley who say, why are we having to wear masks? Everybody knows it traps CO2 and is bad for your health, which is just utter baloney. Oh, let's call it bullshit because that's what it is. And other people that are just sort of resistant to the whole thing, that you can still feel the undercurrent that this thing has been oversold and why don't we just all go back to work and let herd immunity work and devil take the hindmost and some old people will die and that's just life. And, you know, it was pretty disheartening to read. It was a great job by Leslie coverage. And I recommend it on my daily video today. People just ought to read it and say, these are the numb nuts that are leading you, and just give up all hope, all who live here.
Well, yeah, they did not seem moved by Senator Jason Raper's hospitalization with the disease and pneumonia.
No, and that was what I said. I tried to say it as carefully as possible. I mean, Jason Raper, I mean, I shouldn't even preface this by saying I've got political difference. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry he's sick. I'm sorry he's doubly sick with pneumonia. I hope he gets well. This is such a horrible sounding disease. I don't wish it on my worst enemy. But it is true that he was somebody who once more or less indicated that the virus was a hoax, who has said bad things about mask wearing. But to his credit, in his statement yesterday, said this thing is serious. It can affect all kinds of people. Wear your mask. Take your precautions. Be careful. And so, by personal experience, he's been brought, that's sometimes what it takes. And I thought, well, maybe having this happen to Raper would start to penetrate the thick skulls of the Mary Bentleys and Kim Hammers of the world and say, you know, we really do, here's a guy that said God was his co-pilot and said this was a hoax and said you didn't have to wear a mask, who is sick and saying, you know, I mean, the scales have fallen from my eyes. I see that this is real. And I really hope that would be a positive aspect of the terrible situation facing Jason Rapert is some people would come around and say, you know, maybe I need to rethink this thing. But no. No. So.
Okay, from bad state politics to bad state / national politics, Tom Cotton just every week comes up with some new horrible way to get in the spotlight.
Yeah, it's I mean, I would I mean, he's just gone nuts, to put it in the scientific terms. And I wish I was privy to his thinking about this and crazy outburst that he's now involved in. I mean, to a certain degree, I get the nutty stuff about just saying stomp on all these people in Portland because law and order and what have you. I mean, he's just made some outlandish, inaccurate, erroneous statements about that. And that's one thing, but I mean, that's all part of the law and order thing. And that's Trump's campaign theme. And so maybe you forgive him for that, but this thing where he's introduced legislation to prohibit federal funding from going to school of a certain sort, to go in from any school district that teaches the New York Times 1619 project, which was to try and, on the 400th anniversary of slavery in America, talk about how it's affected nearly every aspect of our lives in America and that Black people need to be in the center of discussion. And it's, I mean, he suggests it's, what did he call it? I forget. He just used all, it's just garbage, I think, was one of his milder utterances about it. And I thought, what's the deal here? I mean, and this is the guy who's always talking about the cancel culture, about how liberals don't want to let conservative voices be heard. He's all about cancel culture. He wants to cancel liberal voices. As I've said before, he doesn't talk to the Arkansas Times because he doesn't want us to have a voice because we criticize him. I mean, he's not the first one to walk down that path and not the first conservative, but I mean, what a hypocritical jerk. Jesus.
Yeah, John Brummett had a tweet where he said something about how Trump and Cotton were similar, both mean, but Cotton was smart and mean. That might be a little charitable for Cotton. I mean, he is politically savvy, certainly, but
and he's mean. He got accepted to Harvard and Harvard Law and graduated. And I mean, he probably got a pretty high IQ, but I just think he's damaged goods. I don't know any other way to put it. He's just out of control. I don't, it's not just because I disagree with him philosophically. I mean, that's some of it, but I mean, this is just sort of nutty. And law and order, some of this stuff plays to a certain, well, racism will never get you totally beat in Arkansas. I mean, it's, Obama was a godsend to the Arkansas Republican Party. And this is, and of course he's always out on the Chinese too. But people are noticing this. The ultra right, even some of them think he's a little extreme. I mean, really, you know, I mean, he's just out there. I guess he wants to run for president and perhaps in, you know, in 4 years, and that's some of it, or maybe he just believes all this, but mean, he is there's somebody, was funny. He gave a speech somewhere and he was shown in a video he did of smiling, and somebody said, come on, was that really a legitimate smile on his face or was that a glitch? And the instant response was glitch, absolute glitch.
All right, well, let's talk again about Topgolf and the RFQ that was clearly tailor-made to get it on a portion of what's now War Memorial Park, the former War Memorial Golf Course, along University near 630. There's been lots of public commentary about it.
It's been a social media festival. You know, not really any real news developments. I mean, this clearly was a proposal dreamed up by the mayor and written by a member of his staff as an RFP, designed to lure Topgolf, which he's openly said he's talked with about trying to come to Little Rock and to give them 20 acres of an available 99 acres on what used to be the War Memorial Golf Course to do it. most of the acreage would go for a lighted driving range with giant fences around it where wowzers would whack buckets of balls while paying $45 an hour for a driving range bay and buying $12 beers. And it would go on what is now free public park space that was recommended after months of study by a task force for walking trails, hiking trails, recreational uses, maybe an amphitheater for little concerts, picnic grounds, zoo use, who knows what. I mean, really a vision of a real park. I happen to be inalterably opposed on this. I mean, I think you, if you have parkland, you keep it as parkland, that an 18-acre sports bar is not parkland. I thought our Observer wrote a great article this week that I think got a lot of attention about the longevity of Topgolf as an attraction is dubious. I think that's fair to say. It may be popular now. It's a fad. I think it'll be the next axe throwing thing. It might last longer than axe throwing, but I'm not sure how much longer. Well, longer than axe throwing. That didn't last long at all. But I just don't think you do it. I mean, I think the city has basically said we will prostitute ourselves for economic development. And so all we're really arguing about now is the price. My view is that there's not a price high enough to give up parkland. So I got jumped mercilessly by Charles Blake, the mayor's chief of staff today, for being intolerant and not willing to debate and to let the matter be discussed. It seems to me the mayor's going to now do a deal of get the bids in and then reconvene the task force. Maybe he'll appoint some new members to it that are more favorable to his point of view and then persuade him how this is a great way to do economic development. Well, I don't think you parcel off parkland for economic development. If this city is a good place for Topgolf to be, they should pay the market rate and do their development like they did in Rogers. And come on, we got acres of open land on South University that could use a Topgolf, I can tell you.
Perfect places for it. And we likely are going to have some space available where Park Plaza is now if that continues to go south. There have been among the defenders, you know, well, what about a counter proposal? Well, the plan for War Memorial,
there is a plan
that was unveiled just before the pandemic. I mean, it wasn't world beating, but it was pretty good. You know, it had sports complexes and fields and trails and quite a bit of green space.
And the mayor was going to come forward with a sales tax in which he was going to use parks as his cherry on top to get the money he needed for a lot of other things. You know, the sales tax is a problem because it's so disproportionately impactful on the poor, but it's the only way the city has to raise money. And I thought, well, what are you going to do? But then he had to pull back from that because of the pandemic. But for why is he so fixated on the goddamn Topgolf? Why does he want to push ahead with it? Well, he's now saying we just want to have a discussion on these things. That's baloney. We could have had a discussion on this months ago when we didn't. They could have talked about it in the task force and they didn't. And suddenly out of all the things in all the world, he thinks we've got to have a Topgolf in War Memorial Park. There's just something that smells funny about this, I've got to tell you. And a lot of people are saying the same thing. But the interesting thing is so Kathy Peck put it on two different Facebook pages last weekend. She got 600 comments, all negative. We've got an overwhelming response to the stuff we posted on social media and our blog, all negative. So the mayor says in the city board meeting when this is brought up, in which six people, by the way, stood up and said this was a terrible idea. And he kind of condescendingly called Cappy Peck obsolete for trying to have some means to have a public discussion about it. In any event, he responded to something that was said about Cappy's Peck's overwhelming response, saying, well, that's just the political process, whatever that means. So then he puts it on Facebook last night and tries to say, oh, this is like Central Park and Boston Common and Forest Park and St. Louis and the High Line of New York, which is crazy. It isn't like any of those things. None of those people sold any of their acreage to a Topgolf, I can tell you. But then he puts it on his Facebook and he just gets hammered up and down. I repeat his Facebook page on our Facebook page, hammered up and down. I point that out on Twitter and he says, oh, well, that's just misleading to say that. Those are just all the same objections other people have said. Like, so we now have 1,000 people saying it's a bad idea, but that only counts as one vote because they're all saying the same thing. I mean, he's stubborn, and Blake's response to me tells me that for whatever reason they're not getting up on this. But a significant addition today to the city directors in opposition is Ken Richardson. He represents the neighborhood immediately across the freeway from where this thing would go. He has been a supporter of the mayor on some issues. He's an African-American. He can speak eloquently about low-income neighborhoods. And he said, I'm adamantly opposed. It's preposterous. He said, this park is a... And I go out there at lunchtime, and when the fitness center, this was true at the fitness center, this is the one great rainbow coalition in Little Rock. It's black people, it's white people, it's young people, it's old people, it's poor people. I don't know, the ultra rich may not go there, but I think there's some well-off people that go there. And they're all there together, and they enjoy it, and they come together, and it's right situated between very different neighborhoods. And neither one is afraid to use the place because of the great differences. And we want to tear that up with a wowzer bar. I just don't get it. I don't think he can get the votes on the city board unless I'm badly mistaken.
Yeah, well, I'm all for a Top Golf. I've never been. It sounds fun.
Yeah, they kind of sound like a fun thing. I mean, you know.
But as you say, we have all sorts of other commercial property available. Mayor said he's the chief economic development officer for the city. So let's move on and find another place. We're going to have a sales tax increase at some point. That may need to be in a year or two when things have gotten a little closer back to normal. But for now, we got to hunker down.
Yeah, that's where I am. And I think that if it means, you know, so War Memorial Park has to be delayed, but that didn't mean we have to rush out and desecrate it with a wowzer bar.
All right, well, let's move on and talk about endorsements. What do you have this week?
Well, not much, except I do want to mention this, something we probably should have mentioned before, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we have not. But I get way behind on my New Yorkers, and so I kind of work through them. And so it just so happened that finally I got around last night, I guess last week's New Yorker, which had this monumental piece by Jane Mayer in it about a very important figure who happens to live in Little Rock, Ronnie Cameron, who's the head of Mount Air Poultry. And here's the deal. He is a guy that has an incredibly low profile, but is incredibly influential. He gives millions and millions and millions of dollars to right-wing political causes, many of them from the conservative religious end of the spectrum. And he kind of, I think, sees himself sort of as the next Charles Koch. And he's going to take over a very influential group up in Washington that runs the prayer breakfast and has been very influential with members of Congress. Well, that was part of this story. And part of this story was also the just bone-chilling account of how cruel he is to the employees of his poultry businesses, most of which now operate in Maryland and Delaware and Virginia, I think. And although he lives here and is based here, he used to have some feed mills here. I don't think he even operates feed mills here anymore. But he is a big-time player, and he's always – you can't even find a picture of Ronnie Cameron at a Little Rock setting. And he's given a lot of money to people like Tom Cotton and Mike Huckabee, and so he's been powerful in local politics as well. But Jane Mayer just did some great reporting on this. She found one of his sisters who grew up in Little Rock, found a guy he went to Hall High School with who went on to be a NPR reporter in St. Louis, Bobby Duffy. I talked to you this week. He called me. And he was a friend of Cameron's in high school, at Hall High School. They rode around together. He told me on the phone yesterday he went down to the Cameron's house down in Hot Springs a number of times. Well, as it developed, he later in life came out and is gay and is married. And he went up to Cameron at some event and said, Ronnie, you know, I'm gay. And he said, yeah, I do. And you're going to hell. Anyway, Jane Mayer is just one of my favorites. It was a book length piece in the New Yorker. It's why you've got to read the New Yorker. It's just full of great stuff. And she informed people in Arkansas in a way about a guy that's really important here that nobody locally has had. Certainly I've mentioned any number of times some of his political giving, but that's been about the extent of it. And I was really surprised that the Democrat Gazette didn't find some way to at least acknowledge the article existed somewhere in a column or something, but so far not. But in any event, I recommend it. Go out and it's online, and go out and read Jane Mayer on Ronnie Cameron and Mount Air Poultry. It's for a guy who has $300 million in something he calls the Jesus Fund to do good Christian works. Read about the way he treats his poultry plant workers and see what you think his chances are with St. Peter.
Yeah, that's definitely on my list. That's in terms of the Democrat Gazette ignoring it, sort of reminiscent of how Radley Balco excellent reporting for the Washington Post on no-knock warrants in the Little Rock Police Department got zero attention from the Democrat Gazette.
Well, in fact, they refused to allow me to reprint it because they said it's in our wire service agreement and we may use it. Right.
And did not.
Right.
Well, I'll stick on the recommending journalists things to read tip and recommend something that you put on the blog. And that's a new report from Olivia Pascal, who's a really smart young reporter who grew up in Northwest Arkansas, worked at the Atlantic for a while, and has been writing for it's a nonprofit news organization called Facing South. It's part of the Institute for Southern Studies, which is based in Durham. She's been based in Durham for the last year or two and occasionally writing on Arkansas topics, but has either just moved or is about to move back to Northwest Arkansas. So I think that's good for journalism in Arkansas.
She's been writing about the chicken plants already.
Yeah, she's very active on Twitter. But she wrote this week, which you plugged, a story about how Arkansas's, what's the name of the, it's Ready for Business Task
Force. Oh, the Economic Recovery Task Force.
Yeah,
which has the Ready for Business website, I think.
Right. Is entirely comprised of business leaders and is dominated by Walton. Connected folks, led of course by Stuart Walton, and she just kind of goes through how tight the grip the Waltons have on Arkansas. And
no, I mean, our pandemic recovery is by and for corporate interest. Poor folks will be trickled upon. You know, that's the sum of it. And it was great enterprise. You know, she FOI'd the minutes of these meetings, which are not open to the public, and got all this great information about how it's staffed by Walton people. And it's just all about, you know, protected business from lawsuits and all about what you'd expect. I mean, it's kind of like, in a way, it wasn't news, but to have the details and the names and the dates, I mean, it was great work.
Yeah. Well, so follow her on Twitter. She's, like I say, pretty active and hopeful that we can work on some collaborations, maybe through the Arkansas Nonprofit News Network. And I guess that is a good segue to announce that Benji Hardy, our former colleague, is going to become the editor of the Arkansas Nonprofit News Network and hopefully steer it into more regular and, sustained reporting effort.
Well, I didn't know that. That's wonderful news.
Yeah, so he's going to start in that on August in a kind of semi-full-time way. So, very, very excited about that.
Great news.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe out there, and we will be back next week.
We'll see you around.